Hello and welcome to Four Panel. We are the geek show's dedicated show to all things comic books and, of course, manga, which I often forget to say, but not this time.
Yeah, you remembered. I don't have to scold you this time.
No, I don't have to be put back in the box.
Or in the corner. Or in the cupboard, even.
We don't talk about the cupboard.
No, we don't talk about the cupboard.
Anyway, I am Andrew, and today I am joined by...
Hello, I'm Rob.
And I am Ben.
Anyway, yes. Shall we head straight into this with news?
Yeah, why not?
Right, okay. They've brought out two new teasers for the Gotham TV series.
Oh, boy. Yes. More Gotham.
Gotham's not that bad.
Not that good, though, is it?
I think it's good. It's just not good compared to their other shows. When they've got such a high caliber of Arrow and... Flash.
I kind of disagree. I quite like Gotham because it's a very, very different show.
Yeah, but it's a completely unnecessary show.
In terms of the whole superhero thing, it's completely unnecessary. But in terms of just being an entertaining TV show on its own, if Gotham had no ties to Batman, I don't think people would judge it as harshly. It's because it's got all those ties to Batman.
Yeah, that's why I'm so rough on it.
Yeah.
But because it's got those ties, it means it can't go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's like it has to become Batman at some point.
Yes, yeah. I know. And the thing is, I think that's part of the problem with it. Because season two, they've called it Villains Rise or whatever they want to call it. And they've got two trailers out. One of them is focusing on, Commissioner Gordon or whatever. He's not Commissioner Gordon at the moment. Jim Gordon, we'll call him. And he's going, yes, I told you I'll break you, blah, 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 blah. But the other one is the more interesting one.
Is this like before Jim Gordon grabs someone, just like breaks their spine on his leg?
No, he didn't become Bane.
That would be an interesting twist.
Then I would watch Gotham.
Yes. But the other one...
This isn't the same Gordon that you know in Batman. This is a different Gordon who became Bane.
Yeah, was his surname Ramsey or something like that? Did he used to work as a chef? The other trailer has the young Bruce Wayne and Alfred... And they've have this door, this solid door with a face on it and a keypad. And it kind of teases the idea that that is the entrance to the Batcave. And that's what most people are going, maybe it's the entrance to the Batcave.
He can't have the Batcave because he's like, he's 11.
Yes, I know. And this is the thing that's kind of got me.
The thing is, I find funny is he hits one button on the thing and it suggests the door's open. That is a bad password.
That's a terrible keypad.
Like, what's the point of a keypad if it's one button? You might as well just have a button. Yeah. Or a door handle. That's even easier. Just a push written on the door and you just push it open.
Yeah.
I think maybe he's just like really lazy and just can't bother to open the door himself.
He's only 11. He doesn't know how to remember like PIN codes and stuff yet, so he just needs to have.
It would have been hilarious if they just basically, if they just basically put a metal plate and drew like a picture of a palm on it and said, "Put your palm here to open the door," and all you have to do is put your palm there and push.
It's just a button
with a handprint.
People just think, "Oh no, I need the proper handprint to open the door."
And it's actually just Alfred in the background, beep boop. It's like when he pushes on it.
Yeah. I would definitely watch Gotham a lot more if it was as low, if it was as ghetto as that.
It's like Alfred pushing him around like a toy Batmobile going meown, meown.
The Gotham PD going woo.
Gotham is its best when it has nothing to do with Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
So the fact they've got a trailer that's like, oh, might be the Batcave. I'm like, well, that's the worst part of the show is Bruce Wayne. I want everything else.
I actually totally agree with you on that. Gotham is actually, when you remove the whole Batman thing from it and you just focus on Jim Gordon and the trials and tribulations of trying to be a police officer
stuff is,
in Gotham, that is where it gets good.
I think the best part is the part of Cobblepot.
Yeah.
Just like seeing him before he was the Penguin.
Yeah, and seeing how, you can see, because the guy they've got playing the Penguin, he is really good.
Yeah.
he is really good at playing the Penguin. That is, you know, if he doesn't play the Penguin in the movies later on, then there's something wrong with the world, because he deserves that role. He owns it right now, doesn't he?
Yep. Yeah, he's perfect as he is.
Yeah. You know. Interesting teasers, but yeah, I agree with Ben. The whole element of Bruce Wayne in Gotham is what ruins Gotham.
Yeah,
well, I say ruins, kind of, but
it ruins the TV series.
But he, like I said, doesn't ruin, but it is the weakest part of the show.
Yeah,
yeah, because it's kind of it's building up something that it can't really pay off on.
Exactly. No.
Anyway, moving on.
If they in the new movie, if it references back to Gotham,
yeah.
Maybe there'll be some cool things going on.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I don't think the movies and the TV shows are going to tie together.
Yeah, neither do I.
Which, that's definitely a trick that DC are missing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Particularly since the Flash and the Arrow are so
well known. Especially now that they're going to make a Flash film with a different guy as the Flash.
Yeah.
As I said, though, you know, if they basically did it so that he was the next Flash and you had Barry Allen... You know, and they reference Barry Allen, but then they reference the TV series, you know, with Barry Allen in it.
Like, yeah, that would still work really well.
That would still work. And if you had, if you had Green Arrow, but you had What's-His-Face who plays Green Arrow, but looking like he did when he was on the island, you know, maybe dye his beard a bit whiter, you know, make him look older and have, him having a sidekick, you know, Speedy or whatever you want to call him. And basically say, okay, right, so he's ready to pass on the mantle of Green Arrow to somebody else.
Yeah, see, that would work really well.
You know, so that is where it could basically fit into that, into what's happening with the TV shows. Moving on to Electra Woman and Dinah-Girl.
Yeah, things have been sort of leaking from this all over the place. We've had little teasers from the actresses before. Tumblr's going crazy over them. As they should.
Well, it's Hannah Hart. You know, Tumblr will go crazy over Hannah Hart in a heartbeat. See what I did there?
Yeah, I see what you did.
VidCon, they released a proper trailer for it, finally.
Yes they did. Electra Woman and Dinah-Girl. And I've got to say, I really like the look of this movie.
Oh, yeah, they've got amazing designs behind it.
It's not even the design, it's just the fun.
Oh, yeah, it's taking such more of a light-hearted approach to superheroes. Yeah. It's like the opening scene is them stopping a convenience store robbery in what is blatantly homemade suits that are just a Zentai with some underwear and a cape.
Yeah.
The logo's drawn on in marker.
Well, basically, what an actual superhero would look like if they had to make their own costume.
Exactly.
Yeah. In the trailer, right at the end of the trailer, they basically, you know, do the victory dance when they beat the bad guys, and they're doing the robot and stuff like that. And it's just so well done.
They're two idiots being idiots and saving the day while being idiots, and that is amazing.
I like that kind of thing.
A lot more interesting than the source material was.
Yeah. They've tried to do superhero comedies before.
Yeah.
There was Meteor Man, there was, you know, My Super Ex-Girlfriend and various others like that.
Yeah.
I think this one might be the closest. Well,
Lantern just a giant joke?
Yes, it was a joke. it was a joke. Unfortunately, it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
See, until you said that, I had managed to convince myself that was all just a fever dream I had one night.
Yes.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I think with this...
Let's see how you make that mistake.
With this, there's the potential for it to actually do what other movies have tried to do and actually be a successful comedy, you know, based around superheroes.
Yeah, well, plus now I think we've got to that point where superhero movies are big enough that you can do a parody and everyone will get it.
Yeah.
It's not like... I remember there was the superhero movie that was just a... horrible scary movies.
One of those movie ones. Yeah,
and it's basically it's just poking fun of everything, just saying, oh, superheroes are silly, this is what's silly, stupid about them. Except sort of comic culture but more the movie culture has made superheroes their own thing. So now there's enough there.
Yeah, exactly.
That the general
cool
public
now.
Will know yeah. that you can do jokes about it and people will get it.
Yeah.
It's not like...
Well, I mean, the whole thing... there's certain jokes that have been around for decades, like the whole thing about Superman's red underpants.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As soon as they went missing, everybody was going, where are his pants? You know, he's naked. He's...
the thing is, now compared to, like, just 10 years ago...
Yeah.
Superheroes are well enough known that people know the tropes, people know what superheroes should act like, so they have...
Yeah.
Doing something like this shows... People acting normally in the role of a superhero, people get that parody now.
Yeah, they ask questions like, is Mr. Fantastic's underwear just as stretchy as he is?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Everyone like gets that method of thinking now.
Yeah,
exactly. You know, it's questions like that that, you know, plague the mind of geeks everywhere.
Yes. So many nights I've lain awake thinking, just how does the thing go to the toilet? I mean, does he like have to have his own like special wing that just... They replace after every visit.
And does he literally poo bricks?
Yes, surely he must.
We're not going there because we kind of already did. Let's move
unless
on.
Unless he does that and like that, that's how he builds his own special toilet wing.
You're a bad, bad man. You're a bad man. Shame on you.
Say anything about the concrete.
Yeah, shame on you. Billy Elliot is disappointed with you.
He'll do a very angry interpretive dance at me now.
Yes, he will. Yes, he will. Right in your face. shall we move on? Tyrese Gibson has had meetings with Warner Brothers about Green Lantern, and apparently he really, really wants to play the role of Jon Stewart.
Tell you what, he'd match you quite well.
Yeah, he would.
Yeah, I've got a bit, I'm disappointed like when you told us this story, because I assumed you meant, oh, he's actually a huge fan of the character... I was expecting like some kind of Ryan Reynolds Deadpool situation, but no. It's basically he really, really wants to be famous.
Yep, he really wants to be famous, and I get the feeling he's seen like the cartoon, the Static Shock cartoon.
Yes,
yeah. Where Jon Stewart loses his powers, and Static and his mate basically help him out until he can get his abilities back.
Now, was he end, like gear or something?
Gear.
Yeah, because that's a cool superhero name. You got any gear?
Tell me the truth, if you're a tech-based superhero, your names are limited and they all kind of suck. You can be Gizmo.
Gadget.
Yeah,
I like Gizmo.
Yeah, Gizmo.
It's an adorable name.
There's nothing wrong with
it. Oh, yes, adorable. Yeah. It's like that's what strikes fear into the hearts of your enemy.
No, it's fine. It's just a criminal. Dog, Gizmo.
Yeah, just don't feed him after midnight. Gizmo, Gadget. See, the thing is, Gizmo is a Mogwai. Gadget is a little female mouse.
My favorite one of those, the Fixer.
Sounds like you give that name to a hitman.
You give that name to a handyman, not a hitman.
Actually, no. Oh my god, the best Marvel one, the Tinkerer.
Yes.
No, the Tinkerer or the Tinker?
The Tinkerer.
The
guy who tinkers.
Oh, yeah, he doesn't even like build stuff. He just tinkers with the existing stuff to make it better.
So does he take it apart and he's almost able to put it back together except for like a few screws and gears?
Oh yeah, he's like, I don't know how I did it. I took apart your freeze gun, I put it back together.
It's working perfectly fine.
I got this, it now shoots like at twice the range, but I don't know where this screw goes. Also, the batteries don't fit properly anymore.
So I've had to duct tape them to the handle.
Yep.
So every time you shoot, you also get a slight electric shock.
Just be careful. The nozzle can be a bit wobbly. Make sure it's on there properly.
You may need some extra duct tape.
Anyway, we got way off track. This wasn't about any tech-based...
Yeah, but I mean, it might as well be. Tyrese Gibson wants to be Jon Stewart. I think he's just fallen in love with the Green Lantern Oath. Because at the end of the day, Green Lanterns have their Oath. No other superheroes really get an Oath and not really something that is. I mean, you got to admit, it might be the Green Lanterns and they might be kind of lame, but the Oath is kind of awesome.
I'll admit, I do have like a little toy ring at home, and sometimes like I do like just going Darkest Day and Darkest Night. No evil shall escape my sight.
You're like, those who worship evils might beware my power. Green Lantern's light. I'm sorry, that is a pretty awesome Oath.
It is. It's just a shame that
it's said by weebs.
Yeah,
personally,
or dweebs even.
I think all the Green Lantern's boring because none of them have imagination. It's like, I can make anything from my ring. I'm going to make a hammer.
Yes.
Or a gun.
No, but that is something that exists. No, this is why we have been saying for years the best Green Lanterns will be five-year-olds.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, I'm going to make a gorilla with, like, rocket hands.
Yeah. This is Destructobot. It's like, I'll fire rockets at your Destructobot and destroy it. No, he has an anti-rocket force field. Just like kids used to do. It'd be perfect.
You know, immediately, shield.
Your sword doesn't work on him because he has an anti-sword shins. Like,
oh, no. And don't forget, the most powerful weapon in the universe is your dad. Because your dad could beat everybody.
Like, there's just a
that's
giant.
It, Sinestro. I'm calling my dad. He's going to beat you up so bad.
Tell you, this isn't.
I think we just got an episode title there.
No, right. There's the little Avengers versus X-Men going on.
Oh, my God. Yes, we need a Green Lantern.
It'll be amazing.
Yes.
Oh, that's just
about
genius.
The kids, like. It's like, oh, you seem very tough, but how will you do from the monster from under my bed? Somebody has to run behind the tree. Oh,
we've just worked out how to fix Green Lantern.
Yeah.
There you go, DC. We have fixed Green Lantern for you.
You're welcome. Movie confirmed.
Yes. Send us our checks in the mail.
Yes. Right, okay. Another movie franchise I think we need to fix is the Fantastic Four. Bryan Singer's trying it. And he's teased the possibility of an X-Men Fantastic Four crossover.
But I love the fact you're saying we need to fix it. The new one's not even out yet, but you're already, okay, yeah. This is how we have to fix this.
Yes, we do.
It's going to be ruined.
I mean, have you heard Ben Grimm's voice?
Yeah.
When he's in Thing mode?
Yes.
Does he still sound like Billy Elliot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my
Unfortunately.
God.
Unfortunately.
It is exactly how we predicted.
They need to gruffen it up a bit. But maybe they've got enough time to do it in post. Fingers crossed they do.
But it's the thing. It's like he's one of the few comic book characters where, like, you actually know what his voice is supposed to be
I'm
like.
I'm sorry, but he is supposed to have a gravelly voice.
Yeah, it's like a gravelly, really thick New York accent voice.
No, he's made of rocks. Yeah. He's supposed to be gravelly.
Yeah, he's the only one who's got the excuse.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I can't help it. My throat is literally made of gravel.
Yes. So,
there's apparently talks of doing an X-Men crossover. And I don't think Marvel going to be happy.
Nope.
Yeah, but unfortunately, they still don't have the rights to either of those, so they just have to sit and watch.
Yeah, like if you don't know, Marvel have been having a lot of issues with their movie licenses and the main comic book distributors.
Yeah, things have gotten pretty harsh.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Didn't Marvel just completely say, oh, we're not doing Fantastic Four anymore?
Yeah. Like, they've completely cancelled the Fantastic Four series, and I think after Secret Wars, there's only going to be, like, three X-Men titles, when, like, before there've been, like, seven or eight or whatever.
Yeah, basically, no matter how popular the X-Men are, because Marvel doesn't own the movie franchise rights, they're just going to wind it down and basically they'll kill it off and basically make the franchise. This is basically what they'll do. Fantastic Four is not a dead franchise. It's basically dormant right now. Once the furore over the movies have died down and people realize they can't buy the comics from Marvel, the actual cost of it will go down. Marvel will buy it back. Then they'll relaunch the Fantastic Four again. Same with the X-Men. That's exactly what they'll do.
It's kind of why I'm hoping this Fantastic Four movie does really badly.
I think they're doing enough themselves to sort that out.
Yeah. they didn't get the point of the Fantastic Four at all, from what I'm seeing.
Well, no, because it's basically Josh Trank saying, ooh, I have an opportunity to make Chronicle 2.
Yeah.
Fantastic what now?
Exactly. I mean, if he called it Chronicle 2, I would have been fine.
Yeah.
But calling it the Fantastic Four, Fantastic Four has always been, you know, they are the superhero family. That's basically what it is. It's basically the trials and tribulations of... It's basically, you know, The Incredibles.
Yeah.
That's basically what
was
the Fantastic...
The Incredibles was based off.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think to date, The Incredibles has been the best Fantastic Four movie ever made.
Exactly. I agree with you on
Even
that.
Even thinking about it, a lot of their powers are very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why. I've never made that connection. But yeah, you're right.
You know, but yeah, it's... Just trying, if you wanted inspiration, go to The Incredibles.
So tell the truth, like, I've always felt the Fantastic Four, like, just as the Marvel Universe went on, became less and less interesting. And now the only thing they were really good for was every so often they need someone really smart, or every so often they need someone to be a match for the Hulk.
Or every so often Namor appears and wants to, you know, wants to try and woo some human woman. Who does he go for?
Reed Richards' wife.
Yes, he's not interested in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not cover thy neighbor's wife.
And if you need a cave lighting up, then
no. Actually, there was an interesting in the old comics bit. There was actually a really interesting storyline from the Fantastic Four, and it only involved the Thing and Johnny Storm. It was when Johnny Storm was still a race driver. And basically what happened, there was an accident, and apparently Johnny Storm died. But he hadn't. He'd basically been kidnapped by some guy who thought he was the second coming of Jesus. And he was basically being used as a power source, which later became a storyline in Secret Wars. He was basically being used as a power source, and his fire ability was being fired down into the Earth's core, to try and heat up the core to make the planet expand, making more room for everybody to live.
Oh, isn't that nice?
And also crazy.
Yes.
So it tells you, I think this is a crazy move on the X-Men's part, because I know they're not that great with Marvel at the moment, but they're still on okay terms.
Yeah.
They're not, like, horrible. Like, they made agreements so that Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver could be in the Avengers. They were just like, as long as you don't refer to them as mutants, we're cool with it.
Well, to be fair, I think that was more that they legally had to, because Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, like, are also Avengers characters.
Yes, they are.
Except, like, the fact is they didn't the pot. They were cool with it.
In fact, yeah. Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver are probably more well-known as Avengers characters than they are X-Men characters.
Yeah, because I think that was, like, kind of the crux of the problem.
It's just that their inclusion in the X-Men is on a very limited basis.
Yes, although something I've realised now, and I wonder if, like, it was deliberately planned this way, is it basically the X-Men franchise has kind of ended up with Quicksilver and, like, not really a Scarlet Witch... Whereas the Avengers have ended up with a Scarlet Witch, but not really a Quicksilver.
There's probably a deal been made there.
It's probably good, since the Quicksilver in the X-Men was way cooler than the one in the Avengers.
Oh, yeah. So. Actually, that's the first thing. In one of the set photos, it's been confirmed he is going to be in the new X-Men film.
Yes.
Like, I'm happy about that.
Yeah. So, just what I'm saying is, hey, you're on decent terms with Marvel, maybe... Cutting your ties by being with Fantastic Four, not a good idea.
Yeah, it seems like you're betting on the wrong horse. Yeah,
you could get in the next Avengers movie.
Yes. Just one final point. I've just realized how much The Incredibles follows the Fantastic Four. Right at the end, when the Underminer makes an appearance.
Yes, he is the Mole Man.
Yeah, and I never understood the Mole Man, but, you know, he is basically the Mole Man. And when you look at him, the Underminer looks like a mole.
Oh, man.
it's crazy how closely it follows the Fantastic Four. Anyway, moving on. U2, actually, no, we'll come to that one in a minute. Sci-Fi, or Sci-Fi, however you pronounce it now, is to bring IDW's Winona Earp to TV. Now, I haven't heard of this one, so Ben's been doing some checking for us. Ben, what is Winona Earp?
Winona Earp is a top secret agent for a special unit within the U.S. Marshals known as the Monster Squad. She battles supernatural threats, including, we've got Egyptian mafia mummies, redneck vampires, that sort of thing.
Redneck vampires?
Yeah.
Because, of course, redneck vampires.
Okay, now...
My moonshine's got an extra ingredient.
You know, surely, like... Redneck werewolves, then.
Redneck vampires, do they talk like the... when they talk, do they sound like springs?
I don't know. It's only a comic at the moment. I don't know how they sound.
So, yeah. Anyway, I've got a picture of Winona up here, basically denim jeans showing off the midriff, and basically, she, you know, the headlamps on almost full display except for the tied bikini-type top.
Basically a not-overly-practical outfit.
No, not overly practical, including the...
surely if you're fighting vampires...
Yeah, surely you want to be wearing some... apparently she's wearing some feathers on a necklace-type thing.
That'll keep her safe.
A lot of the comic images, she's usually wearing, like, a leather jacket or something.
Yeah, she's got a leather jacket just kind of hanging off her shoulders there.
Is that like, yeah, she's usually got a bit of the Bunanis showing off in whatever top she's wearing.
But yeah, Winona Earp. I mean, obviously the name has something to do with Wyatt Earp.
Oh, yeah, it's his daughter, I believe.
His daughter? How long do you live for?
it just says descendant.
Oh, right,
yes,
okay.
Right. It's kind of a bit not further daughter, down yeah. than I mean, daughter.
It is a bit BPRD, this, isn't it? You know, Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Hellboy agency.
Yeah.
It is a bit like that.
But it's humans fighting the monsters rather than...
Yeah. Well, I mean, BPRD had humans fighting the monsters as well. It's just,
I know, but they never really looked at them that much.
Yeah, they ended up recruiting a lot of monsters to fight the monsters.
Yeah, because the monsters were, like, awesome, because, like, you had Abe Sapien, Johann Krauss, and Roger the Homunculus.
Yeah, Roger the Homunculus was brilliant.
He was so good.
Yeah. So yes, anyway, and the fact that he was called Roger as well.
Well, they're probably picking this up for a show because it's going to be easier to find human actors versus...
Well, I mean, you've got redneck vampires, so, you know, that's always a winner.
I said, like, I could see this being pretty good, like, with stuff like True Blood out there, like...
I can see this working because, I mean, you know, the Egyptian mummy mafia, right? Immediately, I'm thinking Boba Hotep.
Yeah. Right?
Immediately, I'm thinking Boba Hotep, and I could see that working. So I can see how they'd fit in. And if they basically, if they've done it in a slightly, you know, in a slightly tongue-in-cheek fashion.
Yeah, I think that's what it needs.
Yeah. It needs to be done with that comedic element intact. You know, a bit like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
If they do it like that, then I think this will be a winner. I think people will flock to it because, as we said earlier on with the Electro Woman, Dyna Girl, superheroes are rife for parody and satire now. You know, everybody knows the tropes, and I think that these sorts of comics, Supernatural was such a big thing. Everybody knows the tropes from that.
Yeah,
rife for parody, rife for satire, and I think that this could do it if they do it. If they do it right, it could be the one.
Yeah, I just worried that. Because it's sci-fi, they're going to try and play it more seriously.
That is my main concern. My main concern is not the source material. It's actually sci-fi.
Well, yeah, I don't know the source material. Like I said, we don't know this. It might have been a serious thing, and it might have had a lot of...
It's got redneck vampires. I'm pretty sure it's not that serious.
I say it might be. You don't know. It might just be the setting.
All I'm saying is anything that has redneck vampires in... that I've read, and I've read a few things.
True Blood had redneck vampires in it, and they weren't hilarious. And
did it?
Yeah.
Really? I've never seen True Blood.
They were like more southern-y.
I've never seen True Blood, so I don't know.
Like, I wouldn't quite call them rednecks.
It does sound like it could be parody, but like of the source material is serious. I don't know if it is or not.
I mean, redneck vampires, we're talking like a cabin on wheels in the woods.
So, I'm just saying, I want them to stick to the source material. If the source material is serious, do it serious. If it's parody, do it parody.
But it is iffy, so we're just concerned because they don't have the best reputation these days.
What are you talking about?
They changed their name to Siffy.
Anyway. We're also talking about
Sharknado 4.
No.
The sharkening.
It's not going to be a Sharknado 4. There shouldn't have been a Sharknado 1.
Anyway, moving on. Avengers is getting an exclusive manga adaptation, which is going to be released this Wednesday on the Manga Box app. The artist, Yusaku Komiyama, who has done Ixion Saga, he is posting the Avengers Zombies Assemble manga, which takes place in kind of, you know, the Avengers Marvel alternate type universe type thing. There's a birthday party. Tony Stark is having another year added to his mysterious age. We don't know how old he is.
Happy birthdays, Tony.
So, yes.
Yes, happy.
I can't believe you're
But then, all of a sudden, the party is crushed by zombies.
Oh, I thought you were going to say all of a sudden Hulk bursts out the cake.
Happy birthday to you,
Mr. President.
And he's actually wearing the Marilyn Monroe dress.
Happy birthday, Mr. President.
Oh, this just got very wrong.
Or also right.
Anyway, the zombies crush the party and the heroes attempt to contain the outbreak. Unfortunately, even some of the Avengers have become infected. Now, I have a question, right? Zombies, we know, affect humans. Thor is a god. Can a god become a zombie? Since a god is technically immortal.
I don't know. I mean, like, it depends. Could the zombie even, like, pierce his skin?
Comic logic.
So is it...
What about the Hulk? Can the Hulk become a zombie?
Maybe if, like, Bruce Banner got bit.
If Bruce Banner got bit,
then, like,
but
he
then
would turn into zombie Hulk.
Well, no, because he would turn into a zombie, but if he got angry, he would turn into the Hulk, and the Hulk has massive regeneration factor, you know. What about Wolverine? Could Wolverine become a zombie?
I guess it depends. Like,
it happened in Marvel Zombies.
Yeah, but how? He's got the healing factor.
But
that's like, I think, to be fair, I think they might have even explained that one. It's like the zombie virus is so aggressive, it like overloaded his healing factor.
Okay.
Yeah, because he doesn't attack the brain, not the body.
But his healing factor healed him from having a bullet in the head.
Yeah, but it's
if
like,
the Wolverine Origins
changing...
movie is to be believed.
Which, no, we're that... not accepting that as evidence.
It attacks how the brain works, not attacking it as in rotting it.
Ah, right, okay.
So if it changes the chemical balance in the brain rather than...
So Wolverine
was actually seriously having like a scientific discussion about this.
Yes, we are. Comic logic is like, a wonderful thing.
I tell you, I hate it's people like, arguing about the zombie logic because they're like, oh, how can they run if they're zombies? How can they do this? Do you know the dictionary says that a zombie is a being risen via voodoo?
Yes.
There is no voodoo in the modern zombie, so you can't say what is and isn't a zombie anymore.
Although maybe that is how Thor becomes a zombie, just voodoo.
Yeah, maybe. Like, yeah, you never know. Yeah. But, I mean, sometimes it is fun to engage in these kind of scientific discussions, like the one about Thor's hammer, you know. It is always a fun one to do. One of the best ones is, okay, so if Thor's holding the hammer and I pick up Thor, does that mean I'm worthy of picking up the hammer?
The thing is, could you pick up Thor?
Yes.
No, you could not.
He's carrying the hammer. I mean, Thor weighs what, 200 pounds?
So in the movie, they part of the point, like, if you stick the hammer in a lift, and the lift rises, is the lift then worthy to be Thor?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just... You know, not only that, what about in space where there is no up? You know, if I hold the hammer in space, am I worthy then? Because there is no gravity, there's no downforce. Am I worthy
Imagine if you grab the hammer and then just straight fall straight to the, like, the nearest object.
Does it, I assume it would just, like, stay where it is floating in space because, like, it's not so much gravity, it's just magic.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, you know. Does the hammer just stay like that? Does it not rotate and spin like all the other objects would do in space? If Thor just gently let go of the hammer in space so we could test this experiment.
What I always want to know was, like, if you get a geomancer to lift the ground around his hammer with the hammer on it, is he worthy?
There's a good one.
Because the power is an extension of himself.
Yeah, that's a very good point. There's loads of loopholes.
Or would you just would you just lift the ground and the hammer would stay exactly where it is or fall further into the ground?
Yeah, that's another thing that I didn't understand. Okay, right. Hulk is not strong enough to lift the hammer, but Hulk is strong enough to rip the ground up from around the hammer. Right, so when he's basically pulling the hammer, would he not just rip the entire ground up instead?
Do you know in one of the animated films, Hulk manages to lift the hammer?
Yes, I know. Yes,
but he's the Hulk. He's not worthy.
His rage is actually stronger than the magic of the hammer. That point,
screw your magic. My emotions are stronger. That sounds like something that's
from,
like,
fairy tale.
Yeah, like my love for you was so strong, I was able to beat the magic spell. But instead, it's I was so annoyed at your stupid face, I lifted your hammer and beat you into the ground with it.
Yes. Anyway, on the subject of annoying, Deadpool.
Yes.
Deadpool, the man, the merc with the mouth, now has his own adult colouring book.
Yeah, well, adult colouring books have just become a huge fad at the moment. Like, except usually they're, like, intricately drawn, like, carps and bugs and, like, beautiful
flowers
pictures
and
like,
various
that.
Things like that.
I'm not sure where these have come from, because it's like, suddenly I came back from holidays, just like saying, oh, the adults are using colouring books now. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's a bit of, like, I'm sat there, like, my mum's like, oh, you're too old to be playing Pokemon. Now I'm going to sit here and draw, colour in for a bit. Like,
exactly.
A little double standard there.
Yes, there is. Right, okay, that was the news for today. We're going to head straight into some comic books. So who wants to start us off?
I can start us off a bit of a crossover of Spider-Man and the X-Men. So apparently the bridges between Marvel and Spider-Man still going strong.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think they could ever get rid of Spider-Man at this point.
No.
It's too much of a character.
Maybe this can be like the conduit, you know, Spider-Man. Be like, hey, Marvel, here's my buddies, the X-Men. X-Men, here's my buddy, Marvel. Let's screw together.
You remember Marvel, don't you? You know, like they're your great-grandparents. The ones that you haven't seen in a very long time.
So, in this comic, Spider-Man is going to Xavier's school for the gifted. He's going to be a special teacher, basically sent there to teach the troubled children. But unknowns to the X-Men, his last wish of Wolverine that he go teach there. But he's actually been sent on a secret mission by Wolverine to check out the troubled kids to see if any of them are planning to turn their backs on the school and betray them. So he must teach these troubled children, worm out the trouble among them, and save them as a team. So it's one of those ye old emotional tales.
So is this basically Marvel's version of Dead Poets Society?
Yes. But a lot of it happens in the Danger Room, and they later have fights with giant monsters.
See, now I want to get like the last issue, just so I can see Rock Slide try and stand on a desk and say, Captain, my captain.
No, now it's sounding more like Sidney Poitier in To Sir With Love. Actually, no, that might be more appropriate, since Spider-Man is not an actual mutant, and he's in a school for mutants, trying to teach mutants.
They do make a big deal at the start of the comic, like, dude, we don't want you here. Because it kind of looks bad on us that we have to get out outside people to come teach our mutants how to be mutants.
Yep. So, yeah, it's more like To Sir With Love.
It kind of is, yeah.
Do they sing him a song at the end, you know, with I've forgotten her name. You know, To Sir With Love kind of thing. and give him a big kick. From which Hulk appears.
Not so much. So, by the way, the team that he's teaching is Hellion, Rockslide, Shark Girl, Globman, No Girl, I-Boy, Ernst. Ernst is just her name. She just thinks it's a nice name.
I have a question. Is No Girl actually a boy then?
No, No Girl is a brain in a floating jar.
Ah, right, okay.
And they have to keep a collar and a leash on her just so she doesn't float away. So, like, there's a part later on where they're going, like, we've got smart people. I mean, look at No Girl. Like, No Girl wants to let you know that just because she's a floating brain doesn't mean she's smart. We've all got brains. It's just you can only... You can see hers. But she is smart.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a fun little comic. I'm not going to go too much into it because I don't want to... I think we go into too much depth in comics. Yeah. I don't want to ruin it for people who want to check it out. So it's very interesting. I'm really liking how it goes on. Twist it ends cool. And I like the characters. Like, they got some amusing things. Like, I-Boy is, like, covered in a load of eyes. And there's a part where a guy, like, hypnotizes him. So he covers his eyes. Like, he's got, like, four more on the back of his hand facing the guy. So he's got a lot of, like... stupid things like that, but it's really good. And with, like, Spider-Man sense of humor going in, it's really good.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Right, do you want me to do...
Maybe I should go next, because I have more kind of X-Men related thingies.
Okay, yep.
Okay, so what I have got is Ecstatics issues 13 to 18.
Okay, what is Ecstatics?
Ecstatics, it was kind of a team from, I think, around the mid-2000s. Basically, they're like the X-Men, but kind of if they decided, hey, instead of having the whole world fear and hate us, they might like us if we just become massive celebrities.
Makes sense.
Yes. So basically, like, they're just obsessed with fame and fortune and, like, their public image instead of, like, the actual superheroics. Oh, and also, basically, to help their image, they get sent on, like, insanely dangerous missions. Like, basically, there's a thing that starts saying the average lifespan of a member of Ecstatics is about 6 issues.
Do you know what this sounds like? This sounds like the Western comic book superhero version of Madoka.
I kind of see that, yeah.
You see where I'm going with this, you know? Oh, look, we're all idols and we're magical girls, and look at us, we're so pretty, and we die quite a lot.
Yeah, that sounds very much like what Ecstatics is. So basically, these 6 issues, they're all one story arc called Back from the Dead, in which basically they get a new team member who is kind of a pop star. Also known as kind of a princess in her home country. She's quite well known for basically using her fame to go around the world doing lots of good, you know, help impoverished orphans, all that kind of stuff. But the royal family don't like her because she's becoming more popular than they are, so that they organise to have her killed.
I wonder who this could be a reference to.
Yes, basically... it's Princess Diana, and, like, apparently in the original draft of the story, it literally was just Princess Diana.
It even looked like her.
Yeah, no, it was the 90s.
Yeah, too soon, dude. Yeah. Too soon.
So, anyway, basically, she comes back to life and kind of ends up joining the team, but she knows how to manipulate the public, so she ends up becoming really popular, and the rest of the team hate her. Because she's stealing their limelight. So she's like, well, we only have one option. We have to kill her.
It's amazing.
But then they decide, okay, no, we can't actually do that. Instead, we'll just take her on, like, really dangerous missions. So either she'll die or, like, she'll be so traumatized that she'll want to quit. But yeah, no, that doesn't work. And she ends up kind of taking over the team and basically trying to stop the, you know, random shootings going all across America. But luckily, that kind of works out to their plan because she can't, because they're random killings. And so, like, then the public turns against her. It's like, it's
All just to get rid of one person.
Yeah. But see, it's like, it's a really black comedy.
It sounds it. I might have to have a read of this, Ben.
It is. It's kind of amazing. And like, especially the team, because they are just the most insane, random heroes you've ever heard of. So there is the Orphan, who his power is like super sensitivity.
I'm really sad about my parents' death.
Oh yeah, it kind of plays. So like, he has like enhanced smells, like smell and touch and sight and stuff.
Ah, right. Okay.
But also emotional sensitivity, and like, literally on the first page, the kind of profile picture is just him crying.
Fair enough.
Then we have the Anarchist, who is like the team leader, who's like, I'm not sure what he does, but it seems like he fires laser beams.
Okay.
And is just, he's like super racist against white people.
So Rob then.
Which is great, because, yeah, basically if Rob was black, which makes it even better, because a number member of the team is called Fat, and like...
Hey, that's not me.
He's basically a white guy who can like change his shape into like can like big massive blob things, but basically he's obsessed that he's actually black. He's like, oh yeah brother, I know what you mean, those damn white people. And I think my favorite member
could go either way.
Is Dead Girl, who is a dead girl, like she's a zombie who can talk to the dead. It's great because like there's this whole big monologue thing about how dangerous it is being a member of Ecstatics and how any moment their life could be snuffed out. Well, except for Dead Girl. Like, you see her just getting blasted in the face by a submachine gun and she's fine. And okay, there's like Venus de Milo who can teleport.
Does she have arms?
No, like she has arms, but like the shoulder bits are like weird floating ball things, so her arms aren't actually connected to her. Then the Vivisector, who is like a gay werewolf man.
Okay.
But like, just in one part, they're just chatting, and like one of them goes, so yeah, speaking of queens, and they just cut to me going, don't you dare. El Guapo, whose power is like a magical skateboard. Because like, I'm pretty sure he's basically a parody of, you know how sometimes comics will see a trend and
Tony
they'll try
Hawk.
And make a superhero based off the trend.
Is he a parody of Tony Hawk?
He's basically Tony Hawk.
And they called him El Guapo.
Yeah. Anyway, he is also gay, but in the closet until, like Vivisector points out, you know, you can probably get more in the limelight if you come out as gay. Like, oh yeah, that's a great idea.
It's like, I've been hiding this for years, but I might get famous.
Exactly. And then, of course, their final member, everyone's favourite, Doop. Doop is kind of, he's just this weird, like, alien floating green blob thing.
Yeah, no one knows what Doop is.
No. Like, speaks entirely in Doop speak.
Yep.
Which I think is the best part, because at the end of each issue, they have a letters page, but all the letters are answered by Doop.
Yep.
So just none of the answers make any sense at all.
Imagine if Groot was answering the letters.
Fair enough.
It's basically that level.
And of course, the team is rounded off by Spike Freeman, who is just a businessman who owns the group.
Yes.
But basically, he ends up betraying the group, like, sell the bad guys another group of mercenaries, who are all just, like, really racist stereotypes. Like, you're a French man who is named Surrender Monkey. He is just a monkey, and his superpower is giving up at exactly the right moment. Yeah, Ecstatics. It's really funny, really dark. I think I love it.
I'm borrowing those off you.
Oh, you should.
Right, okay, my turn. I had Hail Hydra, issue 1 from Secret Wars. And this is an unusual one because it has Ian, what's his face? I've forgotten his surname. Oh. Steve Rogers' adopted son. Is it Ian Rogers then?
I think he's Ian Zola because he's technically Arnim Zola's son.
Yeah, but Arnim wanted to call him Leopold, and I thought he wanted to get away from any relationship to Arnim.
Yeah, so.
Arnim or Armin? I can't remember. Armin Zola. Armin, isn't it?
Armin Zola.
Which I'm sure is a pun of some sort.
It's gotta be.
I'm sure it's a pun on like arming the laser or something like that. Armin Zola, Zola armed. So yeah, Hail Hydra issue one. This is an unusual one because it has a bit of a bit. It begins a bit with Ian and Steve Rogers, and basically how Ian decided to become Ian and ultimately become Nomad rather than becoming Leopold Zola, Armin Zola's son.
But then, do you mind my dad's mistake? Because Leopold is an awesome name.
Thing is, it kind of goes full circle because he ends up in an alternate world where Hydra don't just rule New York and, you know, probably most of the world. They actually founded New York at some point in history. So basically, you have this world that is living under the rule of Hydra, living under the rule of Armin Zola, and Nomad is thrown into this world. You know, with all the sanitation factories, which get rid of people who think differently, and you know, he destroys one of those. But then he comes face to face with what he could have become if he'd chosen to be Leopold instead of Ian.
Oh, so like basically the alternate version of him.
Yes.
That's
basically
a cool twist.
The twist is basically, you know, he actually is able to confront what he could have become. And what he could have become would have been was basically a very dark parody of Captain America.
Yeah, because he's like Captain America who works for Hydra.
Basically, yeah. So, yeah, that one's a very, very interesting one. It's one of the reasons why I was looking forward to the whole Hail Hydra series, because I was wondering how they would have done it. You know, I do like to see things from the bad guy's perspective from time to time, because, you know, I have this theory. They're only bad guys because they didn't get enough hugs. Nobody loved them. Nobody understood them. So maybe we should.
Yes. Yesterday is National Give the Red Skull a Hug Day.
Yes.
Talking of bad guys.
Yes.
New Suicide Squad.
Yay!
This is continuing off New 52's Suicide Squad.
So this is like even newer Suicide Squad.
The newer, the brand new, newer Suicide Squad. So, after the events that happened in the last Suicide Squad, the US government is getting all their fingers into the Suicide Squad pie. They have put a guy called Mr. Sage in charge of the Suicide Squad now, alongside Waller. And they kind of butt heads. They've got very different ideas of how things should be. Waller is about efficiency, getting the job done. This guy wants it to be cool and sexy. We need to have the latest guys that look really cool, so this is a team to be feared. So,
okay, so that sounds kind of similar to Ecstatics in that they're all about the public image.
Exactly, because it's meant to be... They're set up to look like a rogue set of villains just doing villainous stuff. And he cares about the superstar-ness of them. He likes that they've got Black Manta on board. His name's Black Manta, that's cool. But he's not sure about this Deadshot and Harley Quinn. They're old news. So he brings on two new members. It's Deathstroke and the Joker's daughter. He does it by paying Deathstroke a lot of money, because that's how Deathstroke operates. And he tells the Joker's daughter that they'll give her Joker's body, despite the fact that they don't have Joker's body. But it'll work out. But on their first mission, everything goes awry. As you'd think, Harley and Joker's daughters don't get on well.
That was basically like the daughter and the stepmom.
Yeah, and Deathstroke and Deadshot don't get on either. They're both assassins. They sort of butt heads. So, and they're sort of going in with no real plan. They're just like, hey, in this building, there's Russian mafia people. Find information on this floor and kill everyone. Deathstroke's going somewhere else to kill another guy. Like, just get on with it, whatever it takes. And things go awry when stuff starts blowing up. They get intercepted by giant robot people who are destroying everything. They lose contact with Deathstroke. Harley and the Joker's daughter obviously ripping each other apart. Deadshot gets captured and is severely injured, and everything's going wrong. I'll leave it there. That's like basically what's happening in the first arc of this. And I gotta say, I absolutely adored Suicide Squad. this isn't as good. The missions are more spectacular. They're doing cooler things with cooler enemies and interesting stuff going on. But they lost the thing that was really interesting about the Suicide Squad, which was the team and the team dynamic. For the last Suicide Squad, they stuck with like the same team basically through it with a few odd changes, and you get to know people. That's why they matter when they died, and they all this sort of stuff. On this, after the first mission, the only people who are still on the team is Harley Quinn and Black Manta. They get a whole new set of people in the next mission, and I can tell that they're not staying around. And
thing is, Black Manta, he was a late entry, a late addition to the Suicide
Squad.
Yeah,
he came right at the end of Suicide Squad. He was basically hired at the end.
There's no real relationship between him and Harley in the first place.
Exactly.
Harley's main relationship was with Deadshot.
Yeah.
And, you know, Harley, I'm going to have a lend of this off you, Ben, because I am curious about how she now fits into this whole makeup of the new Suicide Squad.
She doesn't get on with Black Manta. She acts like a child around him, as she would, because she has no reason to respect him yet. Like, the only reason that she listened to Deadshot was because they worked together and he earned her respect.
Yeah.
So, it's another thing. Deadshot acts really out of character because, like, in the previous one, how did he act? He was the leader. He acted very methodically.
Basically, he did what it took to get the job done.
Yeah, because that's Deadshot. He's cold and calculating.
Yeah,
and in this, he feels sort of like a spoiled child playing up because he's not getting what he wanted.
That doesn't sound like Deadshot.
Because Mummy Waller isn't. Like, he isn't Mummy Waller's favourite anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that never bothered him. He was, you know.
It's just like, oh, I'm not the only assassin on the team. I'm going to act like a complete doof, and I'm going to, like, just do stupid things.
Doesn't sound like Deadshot at all.
It felt like they wanted to get him out the way so they could have a big moment at some point. And, like, that moment hasn't even come up yet, and it's just like.
Thing is, Deadshot and Deathstroke, they'd basically. Deathstroke. You know, Slade Wilson and Deadshot, they would immediately size each other up as potential, as rivals.
Yeah.
They would look at each other and basically start sizing each other up and basically start feeling each other out to see whether one or the other was going to try and stab them in the back right at the beginning. They wouldn't be concerned about, you know, who's leader and who's not.
So, the conflict between them felt really good.
Yeah.
But it just. Because Deathstroke goes away on his own mission straight away, you don't get more of that. And then Deadshot acting up doesn't feel natural anymore.
Deadshot wouldn't act up about that. He'd just basically go, good luck.
He's very professional about stuff in the last series.
Well, plus, it seems like bad storytelling to have these two characters like, ooh, yeah, we've got a lot of conflict and tension together. Okay, well, I'm just going to go off over this way. Bye, see you later.
Yep. Yeah. So, it's for a reason to set something up, but it's just like, I just want King Shark back. Give me King Shark in there, I'll be happy.
Yeah, he's good.
Like, as it stands, it was all about the team dynamic, and so far the only people who've been solid on the team are Harley Quinn and Black Manta, and they have no real connection at this point.
Okay. Right, fantastic. We're going to have to run through the rest very quickly. Andrew.
Okay, I have got Siege issue 1, which is another kind of Secret Wars series.
Yeah.
This is set on the Wall, which is, no, the Shield. I'm getting confused with Game of Thrones because like they're the same thing.
Yeah.
So the Wall is like basically this massive wall separates Battleworld from like the normal societies and all the Marvel zombies. And basically it follows Abigail Brand, who kind of runs the whole thing.
Yeah.
And basically she is awesome. You guys know Helsing, right?
Yes.
I say that like it's some obscure anime that knows.
Helsing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Not sure.
It was pretty underground.
Wasn't that the guy with the. Didn't that have like the guy in the red hat with the pointy teeth?
Carmen Sandiego!
Yes, that's it.
Basically, Abigail Brand. Imagine if Integra Helsing could set people on fire with her mind. And that's Abigail Brand.
Cool.
And she is awesome. She's joined by, like, Leonardo da Vinci, who has four arms.
As you do.
Yeah. The Endless Summers, which is like just an entire army of Cyclops clones and Kang the Time Conqueror.
Okay.
Like, basically, it's just this kind of ragtag group of misfits trying to keep the entire world safe.
Is it just me, or is that what half the Secret Wars have been, is ragtag gangs?
I'm sorry, but you can't call it the Siege without your without the obligatory... what's his face?
Can't be that obligatory if you can't
Steven Seagal. Steven Seagal. He has to be in there. Anything called anything with the word siege in, he has to be
in. Yes, I'm sure at some point they will fight like zombie Steven Seagal.
Yes.
That would actually be amazing.
But yeah, I really enjoyed that. It's got like a really fun kind of desperate tone to it.
Okay, cool.
Like, I think basically they sum it up by it's a fight they can never win, but if we lose, the entire world is doomed.
Okay, cool. Anything else? On yours?
Yep. And I had the first issue of Guardians Team Up.
Ah.
Which is kind of like the latest Guardians of the Galaxy series, because obviously they're a really hot property now. So basically the Guardians, they're kind of flying through space when they get attacked by strange random aliens.
Yeah.
And end up crashing down onto Earth and teaming up with the Avengers.
As you do.
Yep. And then, surprisingly enough, the commander of the strange aliens just happens to be Nebula from the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. What a strange coincidence.
That is a very strange coincidence. Not sure how that coincidence could have happened.
It's almost like it was set up for the entertainment of a reader of some sort.
Yes, yes, yes. Almost.
But no, it is very much like, hey, the Guardians have a film now. We will stick to that as closely as possible.
Tell you, the Guardians before, not overly amazing. Like, when you look at any like suggestions of like, hey, these are the comics you should read if you like these films, like Batman, here are the ones that are like the films, here's the X-Men, like the films, Guardians of the Galaxy, just don't read them.
I definitely consensus. I like this Guardians team a lot better than the old one.
Yeah,
you're on about,
except also they need Cosmo the Space Dog back.
When you're talking about the Guardians teams, are you talking about the old Guardians teams with Vance Astro? And
probably either of them, because like, there was the weird one that was like in the year 3000 or whatever.
The one where they were rebels against whatever. Yeah, that's the other Guardians team.
Not much had changed, but they lived underwater.
Yes, that is exactly the plot of Guardians.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you know, the great-great-great-granddaughter probably wouldn't be fine by that point.
Yeah, she was pretty messed up.
Just like a walking skeleton by then. Anyway, yes. So, Guardians come to Earth.
So, yeah. And then, like, they crash land. The Avengers are like, yo, you crash landed. What's going on?
That makes me think of him in the background. Like, yo, bruv, you're on my land. Are you stepping to me here?
Old man Logan somewhere in the background. Get off my land!
But no, it was pretty fun. Like, there's one scene where just, like, Hawkeye's eating his lunch at Avengers Tower. Just, like, the Guardian ship just, like, flies by. And just, like, he kind of puts his sandwich down with a sigh. It's like, he knows, I'm going to have to go deal with this now.
This is why we love Hawkeye.
Yeah.
He just has that realistic element to him. He just kind of... It is the kind of thing that a long-suffering, you know, member of a superhero team would do.
Yeah, he is the guy who, for superheroing, it is literally just his day job.
Yeah. You know, so, what did you do today? Can you imagine when he goes home? How was work, honey?
Well, Ultron tried to take over the world again.
Oh, that's nice. It would just be a conversation like that, wouldn't it? So, yeah. Anyway, recommend or not? Yeah.
I'd say recommend, but maybe if you can find it for cheaper than like the initial price.
Okay.
Because suddenly it's not like a massively important series or anything. It's just, it's a little bit of fun.
Okay. Interesting you mentioned the price, because the last thing we've got, I'll do the other volume of UQ Holder next week. This week, I want to finish off Prophecy. Now, there are only three volumes in Prophecy. And it's by Tetsuya Tsutsui. Now, Prophecy of Volumes 1 and 2, they set the scene. Basically, there is a group of There's a group of four men on the internet, and they are publicising their criminal behaviour. But their criminal behaviour is kind of not criminal. They see them, the public has started viewing them more and more as kind of the Robin Hoods to a degree, but more violent and less likely to give the money to charity. These guys have an agenda, but nobody seems to know what the agenda is. And one of the things that that I noticed about Prophecy very early on was that it did bear some similarities to Death Note in terms of the planning and the structure of the crime, stuff like that, who they chose and how they chose them. But then it deviated completely. And I've got to say, with the end of this, it basically stood on the rooftop and urinated all over Death Note.
Give him a nice tall refreshing glass of lemonade.
Yeah, basically, from a very, very tall building, it just basically spread Death Note out on the pavement and then just urinated all over it. Sorry, Death Note. You are done. There is a new Machiavelli in town, and it is Prophecy. Not as good as Monster in terms of the Machiavellian machinations, but what Prophecy does is very, very striking. And this final volume, the way that the author has progressed the story to this point and the choices that the characters make are really striking. Really, really striking. And they do leave a very, very big impression. Not just on the other characters, but on the reader as well. Their goal was never what you expected. Their goal was only ever one thing. And right in the first volume, they actually tell you what their goal is. I went back and checked the first volume earlier this morning, and they actually tell you what their goal is right from the start. And their goal for the entirety of the story has not changed for the entirety of the story. They only ever had one goal, and because they believed in that goal so much, there is one bit in the comic, and it's right in the manga, right at the beginning, in the first volume, and it actually says, "The moment when you believe with absolute conviction that something will benefit somebody, it's possible to carry out actions that transcend personal gain." The main police investigator says that herself in the very first volume, but it comes back to haunt her at the end of this final volume. Those words do come back to haunt her at the end of the final volume when she finally understands exactly what this has been all about, because it was never about personal gain. This is a very, very unusual series. Very short, very easy to get through, and actually quite remarkable. You know, the art style isn't as... It's not as full as other manga. Other manga tend to use heavier black lines, stuff like that. The outlines on this are actually quite thin, so it doesn't feel as full. It doesn't look as full, but it is very clean, and it's very much a product of this time. It's very much dealing with the internet age as it is now, because it's all about, you know, how many people are liking this video online, how many people are, you know, following these people, how many people are tweeting about them, that sort of thing. Those things actually play a factor. Yeah, it's very contemporary. And I think that if you're interested in, you know, something, a thriller that has a good plot, really good pacing, some really good characters, you know, and, it, you know, is very, very entertaining. And this really would work as a movie or as a live action series, really would work as a movie or a live action series. It's one of those, this is what you're looking for. Anyway, right, that was... that Prophecy is available from Kodansha and turn around in various places like that. So
yeah,
yes.
you'll never see the ending coming. It's because Prophecy.
I got you.
Yeah, I got me too.
So I didn't. Anyway, I didn't.
Because it's Prophecy, Rob. So you won't see it coming because Prophecy.
I know.
And
I got
seeing
that
things coming.
I was trying to say I didn't get you. I was about to say, you know, I forgot to, you know, hold my hands up to catch you.
Ah, too late. I already have explained the joke.
Yes, you did.
Thus making it even funnier. Yes, we will all laugh now.
We will laugh and enjoy as we say farewell.
Yes.
Thank you for tuning into 4Panel. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for The Geek Show. He's up on Twitter, @TGS_TheGeekShow. Check out all our back catalogue on our Mixcloud, and we will see you next week.
Yes.
I have been Ben.
I've been Andrew.
I have been Rob.
And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.